we are very pleased to start off our year with an interview with J. California Cooper, well-known, well-loved author, whose latest book, Life is Short but Wide, is, I think, going into a paperback printing in the next month or two.
And I'm really interested in this interview. Just reading some comments here, it says that, here's a comment by a person, says, when I read the comments on the back of the book and saw the line, Cooper's work reminds us of Langston Hughes and Zora Neale Hurston. Now, that in itself gets my juices flowing in terms of wanting to read this book.
Well, the book is the story. First of all, it's set in Oklahoma, in Wideland, Oklahoma, near the beginning of the 20th century. And our main characters are Irene and Val. Irene is African-American. Val is Native American. And when I started reading the book and I saw that, I said, okay, good. We need to address that. You know, I'm happy to see a book that would just bring this to the fore, because as many of us know, there was a definite connection between the African-American community, freed slaves or runaway slaves, and the Native American community. And in many parts of the country, you can see people who clearly have as their lineage both African and Indian. So you know, that just made the story just that more interesting to me. Okay, Ms. Cooper?
Hello.
Hi there. Okay, you can hear us clearly?
Pretty good. I would like it better, but if it can't be better, I can hear you.
Okay, well, we'll do what we can. Maybe our engineer can do something to enhance our volume for you.
No, I think it's my phone, honey.
I doubt it, but Happy New Year to you.
How are you?
Fine. Oh, and I've just been notified that Emma, who Ms. Cooper is joining us via phone, she's not here in the studio, that she has just dialed in. So we want to say hi and Happy New Year to her, too. Hi, Emma. Happy New Year.
Hello, sweetheart.
Emma? Okay, we're not going to do that route again. When Emma is
well,
there...
Well, maybe we'll get her. She'll come in later.
You know something? You are the focus of the day. We are happy that you're here. I'm sure Emma will come through, but... But your time is valuable, so we want to talk to you.
All right.
First of all, thank you for this book. Which novel is this? How many books have you written and published?
About 12.
About 12? Okay, and then you've also done plays and other kinds of works, right?
About 20. And I was talking to someone the other day about getting them published. I was, you know, everything is happening. And because I thought everyone had forgotten all about me, then my agent called me day before yesterday and told me I'm nominated for the NAACP Image Awards in February. Isn't that nice?
That is wonderful. So that means we're going to be sitting in front of our TVs and see you in some mad, fabulous gown walking up to the stage.
Well, I may be sitting at home because it all depends on who wins. It's myself and Elian Harris and Mosley.
Walter Mosley. Oh, my heavens. There just needs to be a tie.
Well, that's okay. Either way it goes, I'm glad they thought of me.
I am too.
How
you
are
certainly
you all?
Deserve it. We're fine. It's pretty warm here in Portland compared to the rest of the country, including Florida.
Really?
Yeah, and still as rainy as it was when you lived here. We should let our listeners know that for a while, Ms. Cooper was a Portlander, but I think what maybe the rain and the chill for this California girl just got to be a little too much.
Yes, too old and too cold.
Well, look, tell us about this book. We want to hear from you. What was the inspiration and how did Life is Short but Wide come about?
Oh, honey, you know, I just listen to music and these stories come up and somebody comes up in my mind and starts talking because that's the way. And, you know, it's getting so I hate to tell people that because it seems I should say, oh, I was in a summer night and, you know, the rain, you know, and all that stuff. But the thing is I'm always thinking and I'm always thinking about life. And sometimes depending on the music I'm listening to, someone shows up in my mind and starts talking because music gives me feelings. Music tells stories to me. So that she just came about because I can't tell you except that I was interested in I don't know, and I wanted an Indian. I know that's one thing I wanted. I said, I'm going to write about an Indian in my next book. And I got my Indian. And
why did you want to write about an Indian?
Right. And no. So there's an Indian, a whole family in this book. But there are some main characters. But then... Since I've been thinking about it, because, you know, I really didn't think this book was this much, because I have other books that I love, and this one, I was very sick with the arthritis, and that I got in Portland, And then the leftovers of the shingles, which I had before I got to Portland. And I was feeling miserable. And so how it came about, I don't know. But then one of the girls in the book is a cripple. What is Juliet? And so you just never know. Some people know. I don't know.
Okay, so it just came to you. I have to admit, as I was listening to you, I thought, well, you know, what kind of music do you listen to? Because I'm sure a lot of people out there are saying, well, if music will do it and will lead to this kind of success, maybe we need to get her playlist.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, if I play Rachmaninoff's third or fourth concerto, I'm going to get a story. I know that. And if I play Erik Satie, I'm going to get a story. But I do not know how to pronounce it. I think it's Gnosians. G-N-O-S-S-I-N and something like that. Mm-hmm. But Erik Satie's Gnosians, oh, I get beautiful stories from him. And, you know, and that Rachmaninoff, you know, it has to have music with feeling, you know, so that it's talking to you. Lots of music can do it. I heard one music sometime accidentally on the radio, and but it was, so I had the kind of thing you could press the recorder, and in this, when this music played, I saw immediately a yellow house on the side of the road, and then of course then you go in the house, and then there's this girl that's going to tell, this woman that's going to tell the story. But I had to copy that, and I only got about 20 minutes of it, and because it was, I don't even know the name of it. It's just that the 20 minutes I got, I copied it over and over and over and over, and so that I finally had a whole hour of it, and I just played that while I wrote that story. So it's, you just never know.
No. Now, we're going to try this again. We've heard that Emma is on the line. Is that so, Emma? Can you hear us?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Hello,
I can hear you.
Yes, hello there. Happy New Year.
And the same to you, and lots of them.
Thank you. Were you just discussing Life is Short but Wide?
A little bit.
Okay. I really love this book. When it started off, I just thought, how wonderfully it's beginning that a woman who's 91 years old is saying that she thinks she's probably going to have a long life.
You know, I'll tell you the truth, because the truth is the best. The story was written before she came in it, but after the story was written, you know, I can very seldom write without somebody telling me the story. And since this story had so many places to go, it had to be someone who was there. So I said, where are you? And she said, she was there. So therefore, I wrote her in there at the top of the story. And then, of course, she said things all the way through. But mainly, I didn't have a storyteller. I was just writing what was in my mind. But actually, after I got her, it was fuller. The story was through, but she, when I typed it up, do you know what I'm saying? This is all scrambled. But it was better after I added her. I learned more. I mean, who could know all these things?
I thought, what a great story that Miss Hattie has a mother who's still alive, and she's 91.
And still has her teeth.
And it still has most of her teeth.
I like that.
Well, that tells you she's a wise woman. She knew how to take care of her teeth.
Yes, she did. But this book covered a long time. And, you know, even I got tired of waiting for these two people to realize they loved each other and finally admit it, you know. But they suffered while they went through it, and they still lived. They had lives. I think he married, and these children, you know, I'm not going to tell the story, but anyway, you know what I mean.
No, tell us the background of the story.
The background. Okay, it's just, the story just started out in Oklahoma, that's all, because I wanted to write about somewhere in the South, but not too South, but with all the feelings of some of the feelings of the South. And there was Oklahoma, and it was wide open, and there was my Indian, you know? And so that's, I guess, probably why I went to Oklahoma, because I don't make plans. I don't make plans, and I don't make outlines. All I do is think it through. But the thinking it through is what takes time, because it may take me a month or two of just laying in bed and looking at the ceiling and thinking and listening to this music while the story tells itself to me. And then I of course I pick up my pad that early in case it, you know, and you know, I feel so stupid talking like this because it sounds so weird. But you know, when you play with paper dolls until you're 18, your imagination is very fertile, and you just, things come that way. Your mind, you live in your imagination, really. I have to be careful what I think of because I don't want it to go too far. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You don't want to manifest the wrong thing.
Well, no. If you're turning a curve and you say, you know, I could fall off this car, could go off this. Well, you don't want to think about things like that, so you stop yourself.
How long did it take you to write this book?
I think about maybe a little long because I was sick. Maybe about 5 months or a little more.
You started this while you were here in Portland, right?
Oh, yes.
Because I remember you talking about the book, and it was very interesting to me that you were talking about this book as if the book was coming to you, but it hadn't quite worked itself out.
No.
And, you know, just in terms of what is always fascinating to me is the idea of, well, how much control, how much editing does the author do? What's the process? Now, you said you keep a pad next to you. You don't have you have just like a writing pad, not a computer.
It's a
next
writing
to the bed.
Pad. I can't do anything on the computer, anything mechanical. These people will not come and talk to me. It has to be just me and the pad and the pen. Because if anything, you know, I don't even get to the mechanical till all my pages are longhand. And that's why I'm having trouble now, because I have this trimmer in my hand, and if I write, I cannot always read it, so I have just put down the pad until I can kind of calm my nerves down, because I think all that moving back and forth, Oakland to Oregon, then Oregon back here, was just too much for my old body to take. I'm 78 now, and so therefore, that doesn't sound old when I say it, but it's old, and so what I do is longhand, and I know they say, people tell me, why don't you let someone, you dictate to someone, but that's the magic for me happens between my brain and my hand. And if I sit and talk the story to somebody, I lose the imagination, because how can your imagination work when somebody's sitting there? You know, like, sometimes they've asked me to speak or read a story, and someone wants to sit on the stage with me, but they can't, because I'm back in the story, and they are not in the story. You know what I mean?
Well,
it sounds kind of weird.
It doesn't sound weird at all, not when you say it. And I do want to say to any of our listeners, if you have an opportunity, go to a website, or even better, if she's in the area, go to see Ms. Cooper, because Ms. Cooper, you are like the youngest 78-year-old I've ever met. Like, you are a 78-year-old fly girl, so no, you are not a little old lady. And I think you will eternally be young at heart. I just had to put that in. No, this is not some creaky little old lady. This is like a fly mama. And that's why all these interesting people come to you.
If they gave me that award, how would I walk across that stage? And I said, you know, a long time ago, I said, you know, maybe one day I'll get an Oscar. And just as I get up to reach for my Oscar, my heart attack will come. And I will fall down the stairs. You know how you go with stuff like that. I can see me walking across the stage, and I've got a lot of nice awards, but they were all when I was younger.
Well, the main thing you want to do is wear a short gown.
Yes.
So you don't trip?
Yes. I'm going to wear a knee-length dress if I go.
Ho-ho!
We do want to remind our listeners that you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Black Book Talk, and we are just delighted to be talking to Jay California Cooper about her new book, Life is Short but Wide.
So what number book is this? Is this 24?
No, that's 12. And this, what I really want to write was about Sin Sum. And since I can't write, all these stories come flashing through my mind, and I know they're good and everything, but I think about them sometimes because you don't ever know really what you're doing. But I know I tell stories in which there is some kind of lesson, because I'm very interested in right and wrong and happy and unhappy. So the stories usually have things about things, the mistakes people make. Like, I really write about foolish people because they make foolish mistakes, where if they gave it some thought, their life, they would change just a little bit, and it could be better for everybody. So that's the background. That's what I write about.
You know, how do you keep from writing about the same thing, if you know what I mean?
There are 10 commandments, and people break them all. And they're very foolish to do it, but they do it every day over and over and over and over again. In fact, millions of people make the same mistake over and over and over and over again. So that, you know, you see, you just, and it comes so many different ways. You know, once I was going to write a story about liars. And I started talking about liars because I had to have it based on something real, because it's liars. I like my imagination better because I don't have to know what I'm talking about. But when you're talking about something real, you have to know what you're talking about. And, girl, there were so many different types of liars till I shut the pages and I said, I can't even begin to talk about. When I went through the people that lie for no reason, the people that lie because they're lying for somebody else, and the people that lie because they want something, the people that lie because they don't want something. You know, it goes on and on and on, and these things are integral in people. These things shape their life. Lies are very dangerous. That's why God said don't do them, because they're destructive. And it's like gossip, and I'm not going to talk about gossip too much because I know everybody doesn't do it, but they like to hear it. But anyway, it destroys life sometimes. I know you didn't mean to get so serious. But the thing is, anything you decide to talk about, that's why God said don't bear false witness, because you are messing with somebody's life. And you don't know what you're talking about all the time. You're just talking something you heard from somebody else that didn't know what they were talking about.
Well, tell me this. Which one manifested first, Irene or Val? Or did they both come?
Oh, Irene. Val came first, but Irene was shortly right in there, because after I had Val, I knew he was going to get married, you know. And I knew this kid was going to fall in love, because that's what men and women do. That's what people do. And she needed to need somebody. He could have done without somebody and married another Indian, but he wanted, since his father was black, he wanted a black woman. And his best friend was an Indian. So he certainly knew them. He was raised by them. But he had to run into Irene, because Irene, her name being Irene, tells you how long ago, practically. But she had to fight her way up to get away from her home, where her mother was dead. And she had to fight off her uncles and brothers and some white men and all different kinds of people. Although I never do write books about prejudice, the thing is that it's life sometimes. And so she had come a long way, and she was a nice woman. And she had gotten a job that helped her, where she took care of kids that had teachers. And so, you know, so she had learned, and she made herself a teacher out of the little she gleaned from her sitting in the classes with these kids. So she was kind of perfect for Val. But she was scared. But I liked best one day when he bought her that rock, that stone. And it was a turquoise or something. The aqua-colored, beautiful, with the ripples of color in it, a few. And he said, I have brought you the ocean. Because she had never seen it. And I don't think anyone saw it until her granddaughter took her daughter to the ocean side. That was many years later. But anyway, I liked the way he said, I brought you the ocean. And I remembered, do you mind my talking like this? I remembered I got this from a man I used to work with, very nice, Davis. I can't remember his first name, but he was a married man, very nice man, kind of poetic. And we were in the bank. And he came in with a beautiful yellow rose one day, and it had been raining, and the rain had, you know, it had drops on the flowers. And he gave me this rose, and I said, oh, what a beautiful flower. You brought me a rose. He said, no, 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 I bought you the rain. And then I was thrilled. You know what I mean?
Miss Cooper, you know something? Not only do we love the way you write, we love the way you talk. We invited you here today because we like the way you express yourself. So you don't have to question anything about how you're answering a question or what you're saying to us. We wanted to hear from you this morning. We wanted to share you with our listeners. So you're just being
perfect.
Oh,
you all are so kind, and I miss you all.
And we miss you,
well,
too.
Well, we all miss you, too.
You.
And I miss your husband, Patricia.
Well, I don't know what to say about that. Well, you may have to keep
on.
Girl, see, that's what I mean, folks. This is a fly mommy, so I don't know. Well, we miss you, too. Nah, you can come back and see him anytime.
Okay. That food he cooks, I never have forgotten it.
Oh, when we get off the phone, I'll tell you about something else that'll make you want to move on back to Portland.
But well, that can take a lot, but how is your mother? And I'll talk to you about it on another thing beside the radio. But it's so nice for you. And she told you, Emma, did she tell you I've been nominated for the Image Award in the NAACP?
No.
I thought everybody had forgotten me, child. And when they called and told me that, I said, what? And then I said, oh, my, people remember. So if you see a book, I think you have to vote. I don't know. I don't think you have to vote. They already picked out who's going to win.
That is so wonderful. Oh, and of course you'll win.
Yes,
oh,
let's not
I don't
cynical.
Want to think like that, because if I don't, I'll be mad. See, this way I just say, maybe.
I'm kidding. I want to ask you something else. You know, your books have provided inspiration for a lot of people, but I'm wondering, what has writing done for you in terms of the course of your life? I'm not just talking about the financial effects, but in terms of the person who you are, how you live your life, what has being a writer and the characters that you've met and shared, what have they done for you?
Oh, they have just filled my life with more love, the characters. But what writing really did was use up my life that after I start writing. And when I first started, I loved it because it was fun and I was free. And those were my first three books, all those short stories. And then they said, will you write us a novel? And I said, I don't know how to write a novel. And, you know, and I called Alice Walker and she said, just one page at a time, just one page at a time. So then I wrote that novel. And then after that, they became demanding. And then they start. See, I never edited. Everything I write is one, except for this one, the world, Life is Short but Wide, is just one copy. And I edit it as I go in my mind. And then I don't mind if somebody reads that and wants to take this or move that, but you cannot change anything because these people did it or said it. So, but then maybe they're demanding. And then you run into someone who is jealous of you, who is high, like your PR, and you then you have really bad troubles. And then I got shingles from all those pressure and but I like to write because I love it. I don't like it when they take it over and make you, they say, well, there's this deadline and all this stuff, and I don't like things like, you know, like that. And then they want to do your cover. Well, they let me do my covers for a while, but when you don't make a lot of money, then they do your covers. And I said, well, they don't pick the covers that go with. They have one cover with girl with breasts on her stomach and her back. And I said, what is this? But most of my covers I chose, especially The Wake of the Wind. I was so glad they let me do that. So the thing is it takes so much out of it you that you're glad for the peace if you don't have to work with these people. Same thing on anybody's job, the politics. And anyway, I'm very grateful, and actually, to tell you the truth, I wrote about the money because that was, you know, I didn't have a college education. I went to college, too, and gotten two or three classes at a time that I needed for something I was working on, and but after that, I didn't stay because I was raising a daughter, and I had to work. But anyway, I retired myself at 42 and wrote this book, moved into my garage and wrote this book. A Peace of Mind, because Alice said, if you turn those plays into short stories, I will publish it. So then I moved out of my apartment. I had a duplex, moved into the garage, which was a nice big garage, and had it worked over so that it was a bedroom, living room, kitchen and stuff, bathroom. And that's where I stayed until I wrote A Peace of Mind. And then that's where everything went from.
At what point in the process do they let you know that they're through telling their story through you?
You kind of know when it's over. You just know. And I waited and waited for this last book, Life is Short but Wide, to be over. But then there was that wide part, you know? That was the wideness of it, the length of time they took realized they fell in love. And I'll tell you something else I really liked. I really liked, if I can say this on your radio program, the first time they had sex, because that was the most passionate little love thing, and I didn't have to use one bad word. I love the way it came out because that's the way he was and that's the way she was, and it came out beautiful and secret and sweet and under the stars. And I said, get on, girl, because I like myself sometimes.
You know, well, you're not the only one.
No, you know what your next book should be? Your next book should be an autobiography.
You know, I think about that. I really do. I wish I had done it before my hands start trembling. Now, that I could probably put into a dictaphone or something. But what I really like to write, I'd like to write about seeing something, that little devil. But anyway, you all are so kind to think of me. You don't know how much I appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you, too. Emma, are you still there?
I'm still here. Students have been coming in and out because I'm at work, so I've been trying to keep it quiet.
Oh.
See, we keep
some of them left
real.
Their coats when they went to lunch. But I wanted to say, oh, we appreciate you so much. We appreciate your work, and we appreciate you, the person.
Thank you, Emma. You know you all made the difference in my stay there in Oregon.
You know something? I think we have less than a minute left. We're drawing to a close. So I want to say, Ms. Cooper, is there anything else that you want to share before we close out?
No, that's fine. Except that I wish you all the very best of everything. And I hope to see, I want to go back to that place that I had all that pasta. Oh, that was the best pasta in the world. And I've looked all over California and I can't find it. Food is so important to me. But anyway, I miss you all and the food.
We miss you and love you, too. We're going to start a Bring California Back to Port.
That's right.
Oregon.
Yes. For dinner.
But now we have to say Happy New Year to all of our listeners. Thank you for joining us this morning. Farewell from the Library Lady.
Obie Hill from Black Book Talk.
And see you next month for Book Woman.
All right.
Thank you.